Playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Fred and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sports book.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Right, welcome into another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers, all with you here until 11 o'clock as we take a look at what's going on with the Bruins. Those of you who are just waking up this morning, and there are many, a little bit of a later sleep on a Saturday morning. Appreciate you joining us. What's the longest game you've ever called or been a part of?
Double overtime.
Yeah.
Double overtime, which probably lasted close to 5 hours?
Yeah, it's probably four and a half.
Was game one in 2013 in the Stanley Cup Final? It was a triple overtime game, yes?
I was thinking about when I played. So.
Oh, when you played?
Yeah.
Like the longest, I think the longest game I've been a part of was triple overtime.
Triple overtime.
I've been a part of a few of those.
I mean, but it's 7.5 hours of anything is a lot.
That's completely different. And with baseball, it's slow torture because every pitch changes the complexion of the entire game.
Unbelievable last night. We've got lots to talk about this morning, though, with the Bruins. We'll get to your calls, obviously, at 617-779-0985. Bruins come back and get a win the other night over Philadelphia, 3-0. Coming off of that road trip where they picked up just one win in four games. First of all, before we get to the game against the Flyers, and we'll get into a lot of different things, obviously, goaltending and all of that. I always say that because it's going to get a chuckle out of both of them. But I'm sure we're going to get plenty of calls on that this morning. The road trip in general. You're playing against, you know, not exactly the iron of the league. And three straight losses, hit Ottawa and get a win there on the way home. But one win out of those four games feels like a disappointment, even in the early part of the season, considering the opposition that you had on that trip.
Say yes and no, Ryan. I think that I like the way that they played the last couple of games. I didn't like the way they played in Calgary. Right? They didn't have a good game there. It wasn't as bad as Washington, but they weren't strong. They weren't sharp against Calgary, first game of that road trip. Mm-hmm. So, okay, you know, you kind of let one slip away there where you don't put your best effort out. You know, Edmonton, I felt they played a pretty solid game against Edmonton. You know, you play that way most of the time, they're going to win. So Edmonton, you know, you say, okay, not exactly iron, and I get that. You know, Edmonton goes to overtime and loses to Pittsburgh. You know, pretty good team, and it was Crosby, one-man effort in overtime, beating them. Mm-hmm. They beat Winnipeg the other day. That's one of the best teams in the league. If I'm not mistaken, they beat Winnipeg the other day. I'm almost positive. So, you know, they're capable. We don't know which direction they're going yet. The Bruins went and played Colorado early in the season last year, and we said, well, they're not exactly the iron of the league. They made the playoffs. You know, right. They've got a pretty, you know, they got a dynamic line anyhow, and they've got a team that can beat you with a lot of speed. So you don't know exactly which teams are going to separate themselves this year. You have an idea, but you don't know which teams are going to be those surprise teams. You had a handful of teams last season make the playoffs that didn't make them the year before. You know, New Jersey, Colorado, you know, on and on. So you know, there are, you say, okay, well, not exactly the iron, but you don't quite know yet. You know, the Bruins were 500 through the middle of November last season.
Sure.
You know, were they going to, you know, have 100 and something points, 110 points? You know, that didn't look like that. So, you know, let's wait and see exactly where they're at. Now, and that being said, those places aren't exactly easy places to play. I know Edmonton's a new building and everything else, but Calgary's not an easy place to play. They usually get fired up, and they were coming off some losses there. They were getting ready to play that game. All right, so they played poorly there. They played well against Edmonton. They played well for two periods against Vancouver. That one, I thought, you know, they deserved better in both of those games, but, you know, I thought that the goaltender stole one for Vancouver in that one. So really didn't mind the way that they played. And if you play that way most of the time, you're going to come out with some Ws. So and they did against Ottawa, and they did against Philadelphia. So that's a good sign moving forward. But, yeah, you know, you're not playing the Tampas yet. You're not playing the Torontos yet. I get what you're saying in there. You're not playing the Nashvilles. But, you know, they're going to come, and hopefully you find your game by then.
And part of the difference in Ottawa, and this is what could have netted them some points, maybe across all three games prior to that, was that you got some finish. And the power play finally started to click for the Boston Bruins. I mean, that was a huge issue, and certainly through the first three games of the series, and it was decisive for the team when they had an opportunity with a 5-on-3 against the Senators to score late in the second period, early in the third, added on, and won that game 4-1. But defensively, talking to the coaching staff and talking to a lot of the players, take away the Calgary game. They weren't happy with that game and the way they played. But with the way they performed in Edmonton and Vancouver, they felt defensively, from the chances that they want to be able to just give up per game, that they're about in the area that they'd like.
One of the biggest things coming off of that trip, and actually during that trip, turns out to be the health of the team. During that trip, you lose Miller, you lose McAvoy, you lose Backes. You know, especially defensively, you know, what coming into the season, you looked at this and said, wow, they're, you know, if it's possible, they might actually be too deep right now. They got to trade McQuaid, right? We're not going to, or else you're going to have two NHL caliber defensemen sitting in the press box every night. And here it is, you know, less than a dozen games into the season, and now you're getting tested. Now you're having to go into the minors, and you're bringing up Vaakanainen, and he gets knocked out. And so, you know, you're really getting deep. The impact of those injuries, number one, in the short term, obviously for this team, and getting that test early as far as seeing how deep you really are as an organization, defensively especially.
Yeah, to make you stronger down the road. I firmly believe that. You had to endure some of that last season, some of that adversity. You're going to have to deal with it at some point during the season. You just hope it kind of sorts itself out. Some teams never really recover from it. But, yeah, you got that depth that's tested. I thought, you know, Vaakanainen was pretty good. You know, I was looking forward to seeing him play a little bit more because, you know, I thought he was a little safe in that first game against Vancouver. And in defense to him, you know, he finds out he's got to fly cross country.
Right.
You know, play essentially the game was at 10 o'clock at night. You know, just all adrenaline there. But, you know, he was okay in that game, but he had a good, strong camp, and they expect some good things from him. He got hurt early against Ottawa. He played the rest of that period, I believe, but didn't come back out for the second. I thought Lauzon played pretty well the other night against Philadelphia. I liked his game. You know, we've seen him play. He's not going to wow you and dazzle you with his skating, but he can kind of get there. He's an aggressive player. He competes extremely hard. You know, they were saying the biggest challenge for him is kind of reel him in a little bit because he's going to want to go all the time, and they want him to make sure you're in position a bit more. And I thought he played well in that game, and you know, he made the good first pass when he needed to. He handled the pressure, it seemed like. Played what, 12 and a half minutes, give or take. So, you know, not a ton of ice time, but was forced into some penalty killing in the third period, if I'm not mistaken, when Chara ended up in the box. So he was good in that game. He was good in that game, and they could make sure that they got the right matchups or the matchups that were favorable to the Bruins because they were on home ice, which helps. But still, you know, I thought for a first game, he was good. Now, he's had a little time in Providence for seasoning. Vaakanainen has had only a couple games in Providence coming up after coming over from Europe. So a little different, you know, level of where they're at right now. But, yeah, I liked what I saw from him. Maybe they get Krug back today, and it might even force him back out of the lineup. But, you know, I think if you want to evaluate where you are down the road, I think they've got a good first showing from these two guys anyhow.
Stephen Kampfer came in, played you know, played respectably here in the first couple of games that he sees some NHL ice, and it.
He's a veteran, too.
I mean, right, you know, and I thought it was interesting because in the off day in Vancouver, he actually, so he's on the plane, he's thinking about it, wow, things have changed quickly. Okay, I'm going to have an opportunity to go in. How do I want to approach this? That's something that a veteran defenseman and a guy who's been around the league certainly understands. So he was able, he had mentioned it when we had talked at the morning skate on Saturday, had a chance to really think about it. How do I want to shape my game? Because really, the Boston Bruins were only looking for 10 to 12 minutes from a guy like Steven Kampfer on a night-in, night-out basis. And he's come in, and he's given you some responsible play. But the other thing that, he and I had joked about is how quickly things can change around the National Hockey League with the way that the game is played. You're tested not just based on the guys that you have on your 23-man roster or however you're icing on your NHL roster. You're tested on the depth in your system because it's going to get called upon at some point during the 82 games.
Well, and Kampfer comes in the other night, and he gets paired up with Lauzon, right? I mean, he's there. So he's a veteran guy, as you said, Bob, but, you know, here's a guy who's, you know, deeper on the depth chart. He gets paired up with a kid who's making his NHL debut. So obviously they're going to lean on him a little bit to, you know, to help Lauzon along the way.
He's the fourth guy on the right side.
Yeah, and that, and I thought, you know what, the pairing as a group had a good night. They were a solid pairing for
and,
you.
Yeah, they were fine. I think they gave up 1-2-on-1, and Kampfer stepped up there. And whether it was did he have support? Did he not have support? Lauzon actually played the 2-on-1 pretty well. That was in the second period. Kampfer had a couple big hits in that game, dropped the gloves in that game. You know, he's had a big hit in every game he's played.
Yeah.
He threw a big hit against Vancouver, threw a big one against Ottawa. It was good, clean, physical hits. And the one against Vancouver was the very first shift that he played. So this is the first shift of the season, you know, and he throws a nice hit along the wall. So, you know, he wants to get in. He wants to get his feet under him right away. You know, they all, he's sitting in the locker room, you know, give a hit, take a hit, you know, whatever you got to do to get into the game. And, you know, he did that. So, yeah, no problem with him. Then I'll flip it on the other side there that so those guys, you say 10 to 12 minutes or 13 minutes, whatever it is, they can only do that if the top end is playing a lot of minutes.
Hold that thought, because we're going to talk about that, because Brandon Carlo has really stepped up here over the last week or so. We'll get to that coming up. We'll get to your calls coming up. 617-779-0985 as we get started here on this week's Hockey Show.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Chuck Surratt, Bob Beers, the home of the Bees, 98.5, The Sports Hub. This is where Boston talks hockey. The Sports Hub Hockey Show on the home of the Bees, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
.985 The Sports Hub. It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers, Hall in our Town Fair Tire studios here this morning. All right, just picking up where we left off in talking about the depth of the defenseman being tested for the Bruins this week with some of the injuries that they're dealing with. Obviously, Krug's been out a little while, but they lose McAvoy during the trip. They lose Miller. They lose Vakanainen, who comes in to try to fill a spot. And so, you know, Kampfer's in there, Lauzon's in there. And as you started to mention, Bob, the guys at the top of the list have to, you know, maybe play a little bit more extended minutes than they're used to. And first and foremost among those is Brandon Carlo, who's, you know, over the last few games going, you know, 24, 25 minutes a night.
28 plus against Ottawa.
I mean, like putting up legitimate top 2 minutes here over those last few games. And, you know, for a guy who at times last year, you know, looked like his confidence was down a little bit, looked like he was struggling, has really stepped up his game when the Bruins have needed him in the last few games.
Yeah, tough injury, so he didn't get to play in the playoffs, and that's 2 years in a row, unfortunately, for him. But, you know, he'd always say that. You don't always say it, but you see a guy, he was just starting to figure it out before he got hurt, right? Mm-hmm. You know, but it really looked that way with him. He was playing with, you know, with more authority. You know, he was stronger on guys down low, especially, you know, in the corners, in front of the net, those types of areas where, you know, you got to be a harder guy to play against. He was using his feet to, you know, close on guys to get up in the play, those types of things. He just looked like a more confident player, and he played with a bit more of an edge, and that's what they were looking for. You know, with Brandon Carlo, it's like he's just a really nice guy. You know what I mean? And I always use the example. So was Adam McQuaid, nicest guy going. You know, but when he had to flip the switch, you could. And he doesn't have to drop the gloves every time like McQuaid did. He doesn't have to be like that. If it's not there, it's not there. But be a harder guy to play against. You know, when a guy gives you a shot in front of the net, when he gives you a push or a cross check in front of the net after the whistle, don't turn away. You look right back at him and give him a shot back. And, and that's what he's doing right now. And that's after the whistle stuff. But between the whistles, be a harder guy to play against, and he's doing that. And then the game at Vancouver was like, he was up in the play. He was like, he had the legs going. He was everywhere that game. He was really, really strong in that game. Overtime, notwithstanding, he had a little hiccup in overtime. But, you know, don't let it overshadow what he did for the first 60 minutes. And against Ottawa, I didn't think he was as good against Ottawa. Thought a couple times he got stuck in his own zone a couple of times, and they had some trouble moving the puck up the ice, but he was good. I mean, and Chara had took three penalties in that game, so he had to play 28 minutes. He was good. He wasn't as good as Vancouver, but he was good. And then I thought he followed up with another strong game the other day against Philadelphia. He's become a really good penalty killer. And I think they were out there they killed two penalties in the third period, and I have to double check, but I'm almost positive he was out there the entire time on the two penalties when they were shorthanded in the third.
So the difference there, I think, for Brandon Carlo, just, you know, when you think about Carlo, it's not an issue with his skating. It's not an issue with his size. It's not an issue with his shot, his ability to move the puck. The issue is the 6 inches between those ears, and I think that that's the big difference. The other day, Bruce Cassidy at practice had mentioned, I don't know if it's because he's playing with Zdeno Chara again, or he realizes that maybe we need more from him because Charlie McAvoy is out of the lineup. So I put the question to him, so which is it? And he went to a third option, and this is the real difference, that he's focused on positivity. He's not trying to lean on anybody in particular, that everything is coming from within from him. And you can see a more confident game, and you're seeing the way he's playing the game because he's more confident. But the changes are from within.
Now, you know, nobody's immune to it, or let's just say very, very few guys are immune to it because they want the mental aspect of the game, especially a young defenseman. And it snowballs in a hurry when things aren't going well, and vice versa. It snowballs in a positive way when things are going well. Everybody battles that inner, you know, that voice saying, you know, or just the struggles, you know, every time you make a mistake, it's magnified. Sure. Every time you make a mistake, you got to go to the bench and you know that you screwed up. And it's not easy, and it can go on for games. And it happens with goal scorers, right? It happens with veteran players at times. You know, it takes a pretty strong person to just kind of let it go and just move forward. And some of that takes time, and some of it is just built into guys. But very few guys don't have to endure some of that. And again, I think that makes, if you can come out of it, that makes you stronger and better down the road and better equipped to handle things like that.
Well, and it's easy to forget too. I mean, this is a 21-year-old kid, right? I mean, he's like, you know, especially it feels like at the defense position, you know, it takes a much longer time for those guys to develop and be able to do what you're talking about and kind of not let every little mistake or, you know, hurt you or, you know, not be a little over anxious at times about, you know, what do I have to do in this position?
Everybody says, his rookie year, he's really good, and he was playing with Char and whatever, and then he took a step back last year. He's better now than he was in his rookie year, at least these last handful of games. Mm-hmm. I mean, no question. He's better. He's more active. He's more involved. And maybe that's a product of, guys going down injured. McAvoy's not in the lineup right now, and he's got an opportunity. McAvoy and Miller aren't in the lineup on the right side. You know, that's all possible, but he's taken it a step beyond where he was that first year. And, you know, they've had him and Char have complimented each other because of that.
617-779-0985. Let's open up the phones with Maria in Watertown. Good morning, Maria.
Hi, good morning, guys. How are you?
Good.
I'm not calling to talk about goalies today. I'll save that for the Tuca haters. But I have a question and a quick comment. With regard to Brandon Carlo, I really, really liked what I saw on Thursday night, and his physicality and developing a little snarl and nastiness to his game, which I really think the Bruins need on the back end. Keeping with talking about defensemen, I'd like to know what you gentlemen think of Matt Grizzlick's play thus far this season, because I've seen inconsistencies, and maybe it's me, but I'd like to get your opinion. And just kind of a comment and rhetorical question is, how can we continue to take the Department of Player Safety seriously and the NHL seriously about wanting to get rid of the types of hits that were thrown at Vaakanainen when you only suspend this guy for one game? I don't understand it. I'm losing faith in them wanting to get rid of that kind of stuff from the game that I love. Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks, Maria. I mean, she's questioning the consistency of Matt Grizzly. I question the consistency of the Department of Player Safety plenty of times over the years as well, because it does seem like, you know, the justice is not always evenly handed out.
Well, here, if you want to stick with the National Hockey League's Department of Player Safety, I guess off the Borowiecki hit, it merited something. It
sure
merited some sort of supplemental discipline. They ended up handing him one game. But I guess what's puzzling is, because there's no transparency, what are you basing the one game on? When you go back and look at David Backes's hit last year against Franz Nielsen of the Detroit Red Wings, we're talking about a guy who had never been suspended in the past, who they admit on the video tried to contort himself in a way to avoid head contact. He got three games. Mark Borowiecki is a repeat offender. He had been suspended in the past. Now, I know
Under their rules, he's no longer a repeat offender.
Right, they say that,
right?
You know, somehow the previous suspension had been expunged. If you'd been suspended in the past, you're a repeat offender. And then the other thing is that they mentioned that he deliberately raises his forearm or elbow up at head level to direct a shot at Juho Vaakanainen, who is not in the crease or in the blue paint at the time. He had the ability to lower his hands or deliver a blow that would not have struck his head. That got one game. Backes got three. And what's confusing to me, and what I'm trying to figure out, is what are you basing these decisions on? Why are you giving him one and Backes three? I don't understand that. And I think that player safety, and again, it's not an easy job. Everybody is griping to them at some point or another about who's getting suspended for how long or who's not getting suspended whatsoever. But if we could have more transparency, that would help.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many tough decisions to be made on those hits. You know, did Matt Benning deserve one for the hit on David Backes? I know a lot of people felt he did. There's so many of them that you can break down. My disappointment was he didn't get a 5-minute major at the time, or at least a 2-minute penalty at the time, and give the Bruins a power play. So not only did Bergeron get taken down in the crease,
right?
You know,
right? I mean, you
could argue that could have been a penalty.
You had a goal taken away from you by that trip in the crease.
I was saying, you know, you could have come out of this on, if you didn't score, you could have had a 5-on-3.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a difference maker in a game. So neither one was called. Okay, you can argue that the Bergeron one was just a good defensive play. I don't know. I mean, you can argue either way on that one. But there's no argument on the Borowiecki things. Everybody just focused so much on the puck that they don't see an elbow to the guy's head who's coming into the pile. It's right around the puck. So they didn't catch it. They didn't see it. The league did. One game, whatever. The ironic thing was Borowiecki, there was a huge article. I mean, it was like a massive article in the paper, and he was complaining. He was talking, because George Parros came in and talked to both teams that day, or the day before. Day before that they played each other. And Borowiecki was in there saying, you know, Brendan Gallagher hits me from behind the other day, and I get knocked down, but I get right back up, so there's no penalty, there's no suspension. If I did that to Brendan Gallagher, I'd be suspended. I'm not that type of player. I've changed my game. I don't do these things. And I'm not whining about it. I'm not saying about it. And that night, he sticks his elbow in Vaakanainen's grill. So, you know, it was kind of ironic that all that was happening all at the same time up there. But, you know, how many games he gets? I wanted him to get a penalty at that particular time.
Right. So, right, because the suspension, you know, look, it maybe tries to send a message to him for the future, but it doesn't help you in the game, no. Right? And you also lose a defenseman,
right.
For you know for who knows how long. So
when he's saying that he's got to protect the front of the net, I get it. Or he's trying to box out. Who boxes out with a forearm at head level, right in the jaw?
Right.
Who does that?
All right, we'll continue here on this Saturday morning. It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show, 617-779-0985. Tim McCone's got our Sports Hub headline.
This is the Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerai, and Bob Beers on the home of the Bees, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
.5 the Sports Hub and the Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning. We'll take you up until 11 o'clock. 617-779-0985 is the number to get through to us here in our Town Fair Tire Studios. It's Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers, and now joined by Joe Haggerty. He covers the Bruins for NBC Sports Boston. What's going on, Hags?
What's up, Ray? We're glad to hear you powering through this sleep-deprived shift after last night's game. Good job.
2 hours and 45 minutes of beauty rest is all I needed last
we
night.
We saved all the goalie talk for you, Hex.
Oh, good. Glad to hear it. That's my specialty, right?
I haven't touched on it yet.
Before we get to that, as we were talking in the first half hour about the depth of this team being tested early on in the season, take us through what do we know about injuries and timelines for all of these guys?
Backus I saw walking around yesterday, he was at the facility. Seems like he's, you know, feeling better, which is great news for him. You know, he's the one, 34 years old, had some concussions in his past that I think you kind of get the most concerned about. You know, they're calling it an upper body injury, but, you know, I think we're all fairly certain of what it is. And it seems like he's starting to feel better. I actually saw Charlie McAvoy last night out at Ocean Prime. He was doing a charity event for the Travis Roy Foundation, and he, you know, he said that he's feeling better. So that's great news as well. So I think those you'll probably see those two on the ice sooner rather than later. I would expect. Torrey Krug is an interesting one. You know, it all depend, I guess, on how he responded to practicing yesterday. I still think he's probably a little too soon to throw him back in there tonight against the Canadiens, but. Bruce Cassidy definitely didn't completely rule it out. If he doesn't play, then Lauzon will play again. I thought he was pretty good in that first game. And Iiro Vaakanainen obviously still out with a concussion as well. And Kevin Miller is going to miss at least 3 weeks with that hand injury suffered when he got hit with the shot. So, you know, fairly good news on a couple of them, important players in Backus and McAvoy, where I think they're making steps. But I would be surprised if any of the injured players, including Krug, play tonight against the Habs.
Look at you out hobnobbing with guys. Just, you know, hey. Friday night. We're going to see your name in the inside track, all that.
You know what? There was a choice between McAvoy had a bone-in ribeye with blue cheese potatoes, and Achari had a sea bass, a Chilean sea bass over lobster risotto. I think you guys know I went with the steak, and I was well rewarded. I think McAvoy's dish takes the crown for sure.
Right, this was you're not describing what they were eating. You're describing there was like a charity thing, right?
There's a thing going on at Ocean Prime for the next 2 weeks where both players, McAvoy had the ribeye steak, and Achari had the sea bass. They decided what their dish was going to be, and they kind of curated it. And I guess you can order it at Ocean Prime over the next 2 weeks. And they're going to see who wins, who has the more popular dish. And proceeds from every time you order that dish, proceeds from it go towards the Travis Roy Foundation. So people for the next couple of weeks can go there, order up some good food at Ocean Prime, and end up having some of the money go to the Travis Roy Foundation. So nice. It's all good stuff.
Nice. I think I'm going with the steak on that one, too.
Yeah, get some sauteed mushrooms on that puppy, too. You won't be sorry, Ray.
All right. Let's talk goalies. Yaro Halak has played really well, as good as anybody could have hoped. Bruce Cassidy, you know, is getting asked about it more and more, obviously. Where do they go from here?
Well, I don't think they're there yet, obviously, where they're going to hand it over to Halak and say he's going to get the bulk of the starts, nor should they. I think it's still early, and they're still, at least through this month, kind of scripting out, you know, starts. Tuukka's going to play tonight against the Habs, but really what it comes down to right now is the pressure is on Tuukka Rask to perform and play really well if he still wants to get the bulk of the playing time and if he still wants to be the number one guy here. And you know, I think he will be, and I think he's going to play better. And obviously he's become a slow starter over the last few years. And, you know, this was, again, one of those instances in the first few weeks here. But you know that he's going to get hot through the middle of the season, and there's going to be a point where he's going to be really good, and he's going to play a bulk of the time. And you couple that with the fact that even though Halak has looked outstanding and he's been consistent in every start, he's been really good. He throws a shutout against the Flyers in the last start. You know, there's a reason he's kind of bounced around, and, you know, he's been a number one different places. And at some point, he's going to cool off a little bit too. And you kind of have to know that going in, that he's not going to have a 945 save percentage for, you know, the entire season. So right now you're getting the best of him really pushing Tuukka Rask. If he continues to play well and Rask continues to be kind of inconsistent in the start, could Halak take, you know, a bunch of starts over a 3-4 week span and you know, see how long you can ride him being a hot goalie and him being the better goalie? I think that's for sure. I think something like that could happen if they both trend in the directions that they're in right now. But you kind of hope that, you know, the way Halak is playing is going to push Rask to be at his best right now and get him into that, you know, hot streak that he can get into in the middle of the season. And, you know, he kind of reclaims or keeps what he has right now. And even if, you know, it works out where it's kind of like it is right now, it feels to me like it's almost going to be like a 60-40 split between Tuukka and Halak. And Halak is going to play a lot. And more than Hudobin did last year. And I think that's a good thing, and that's kind of the best of both worlds, as long as Halak can keep up his end of the bargain. I'm not going to say goalie controversy, because I don't think we're there yet, but Halak is certainly putting the pressure on Tuukka, and I think that's a good thing.
Well, I mean, if you listen to Bruce Cassidy's comments the other day about, you know, the two, and talking in particular about Halak and saying, look, when we, you know, we brought this guy in, we told him, you know, if you play well, we're not going to limit your starts, right? I mean, it seems like, you know, they went into this obviously hoping that he's going to play well enough to push Tuukka, but, you know, they sold him on the fact that if you come here and play well enough, you know, you're going to get time. We're not going to just going to say, well, you're going to get your 25 games and that'll be it.
Yeah, and then, you know, that's probably how you get a guy like Halak to come here and start out as the backup is, you know, letting him know that if it's going to be based on merit, and if he plays really well and he outplays Tuukka Rask, that he's going to play, and he's going to play a lot. And I think that's how, you know, Bruce Cassidy kind of runs it with everybody on that team. It doesn't matter, you know, how much money you're making or you know, what your status is, you know, before the season starts. It matters what you're doing once the games get going. And I think there's no reason why goaltending shouldn't be any different. And, you know, let's face it. The Bruins are paying almost the most of any team in the league for their goaltending. They're paying almost $10 million for Halak and for Tuukka Rask. For what they're paying, they should be getting elite goaltending. They should be getting the best goaltending in the league. And if it's your backup that's playing that well and your starter's not, then I think you should just roll with him, because it's going to be a real inefficiency for the Bruins if they're not getting the top drawer goaltending that they're paying for. You know, so you go with the guy that's giving you the best chance to win. And I think Cassidy's going to do that with Halak if he's the better goalie. But like I said, I think there's a caveat in there where we know, having seen Halak in the past in other places, he can get really hot for a while and then he can cool off for a while. And, you know, I would expect, as hot as he is right now, there's going to be a point in the season where he's not going to be as good. And that's when you'll see, you know, the consistency of Tuukka Rask come into play. So I am, even though I know people think of me as a Tuukka Rask basher, I just tell it like it is, or I try to. And you know, I think Tuukka Rask is far from losing his number one gig permanently to Halak, put it that way.
Well, no, I don't know that anybody expects anything permanent, right? I mean, what happened last year happened, and I don't think that it would shock anybody if it happens again this year that, you know, for maybe a limited stretch, maybe even a little bit longer stretch, that Halak ends up getting the bulk of the starts at some point, but that Tuukka ultimately will turn out to be your guy down the stretch and into the playoffs. I mean, I don't think that would shock too many people if that happens at some point.
No, and, you know, there's got to be a curiosity to the Bruins, too, to see what another guy would look like in there over a longer period of time that you're not paying as much money, you know? I mean, just for the long-term outlook of the team, are you better off
you know, finding a couple of goalies that you pay $3 to $4 million a year, and you know, you have the team in front of you playing well, and they can play reasonably well, or is it better to have a guy that you're paying $7 or $8 million a year to that may not be performing, you know, that much better than the other guys you would bring in? I think that's an interesting exercise, and it's something interesting to look at. And they're not going to know the answer to that question, what another goalie would look like that you might pay that kind of a range for, unless they put him in there and see how he does with the team in front of him. You know, and obviously they've got Rask signed for years to come here, and, you know, it's not in a position where, you know, he's, like you said, he's going to lose his job on a permanent basis. But I do think there might be a curiosity with the Bruins, too, though, to see what another goalie would look like over a longer stretch with the team in front of them to kind of gauge, you know, what they have.
Well, I kind of wonder if there's a curiosity about, you know, if we did go cheaper. Right. I mean, you've got a lot of money that's going to need to be spent here in the next few years, you know, with some of these guys, particularly McAvoy, you know, with his next contract. So do you look at that and say, all right, where is a place we might be able to save? Well, you know, Tuukka's carrying an awful, awful big number. If you feel like you can, I mean, it's a gamble, but if you feel like you can get by going cheaper at that position, you know, you could potentially save some money there.
Well, hold on one second, Hags. You know, I know you say that maybe the Bruins will go through this exercise where they put somebody in and see what that goaltender might look like who doesn't cost as much as Rask. And this is what I'll say, whether it's the Bruins or any team in the National Hockey League, it is different to be the guy. And there's no way to test that unless he is the definitive number one. To go in there, and even if it's a relatively decent sample size, even 40 games, there is no way for you to tell. There are so many guys around the National Hockey League, when they become the guy for the first time, they either sink or swim. Scott Darling, maybe we'll get a chance to see him in Carolina. I had a chance to see him in Chicago. There was no question that he had the ability to be the number one, but he hasn't shown that he can be the number one. Other guys, like Corey Crawford, his first year as the number one guy, he struggled in Chicago. Jake Allen in St. Louis, when he became the definitive number one, he struggled with it. He may never be that number one guy, even though he has the ability. James Reimer down in Florida. Now you're the number one guy. Roberto Luongo was sidelined here for a while. How are you doing? That's an issue for the Florida Panthers. So I don't know if the Bruins can actually go through that exercise and know for certain whether it's Yaroslav Halak or any other guy that they want to go through this exercise with, whether he can be the number one.
I'd agree. The only thing I would say to that is, like, the examples that you mentioned, and I think you're right on with that, is that those are young guys where that was kind of a, you know, getting a look at number one where they'd never established themselves at number one as a
James
number one
Ryan's
guy.
He's not that young, Hags.
No, I know. But, like, you know, he's
not the guy. They signed him with that intent.
I understand that. He's a backup, though. They tried him in Toronto as a number one. He clearly wasn't the number one.
Right, but they signed him there as the guy who would replace Roberto Luongo down the stretch. I don't think that that's a solution for them there.
No, I don't know that they signed him to replace Roberto Luongo. If he got injured, replace him, sure, but not replace him if, you know, all things being equal, you know, in an ideal scenario. With Halak, he's been a number one guy before. They know that, and I'm throwing the example out there of guys that if you're going to sign guys for $3-4 million a year, it's going to be guys you think can be number ones. And you're absolutely right. They're not going to be able to prove it until they go out there and, you know, they have all that weight on their shoulders, the weight of the world on their shoulders. But a guy like Halak has done that before. Granted, he's bounced around from place to place. And I don't think, you know, I don't know that he's the answer. And I don't know that he's the guy that you would say this is the number one we're going to ride or die with. What I'm saying is I think they may want to look, the Bruins may want to look at another goaltender in there and see what life would look like with that guy in there rather than Tuukka Rask, and see if they could get something reasonably close to what they're getting out of Rask from somebody else from a much lower salary and lower cap number. And as Ryan mentioned, and I think this is something that Don Sweeney always has on his mind, is you've got a lot of young players. Those young players are going to start getting paid. Jake DeBrus, Charlie McAvoy, Brandon Carlo go down the list, and they're going to start costing you a lot more money while you've already got plenty of money sunk into guys like, you know, granted they're on good contracts, Marchand, Bergeron, Pasternak, et cetera, you're going to have to find places where you can cut salary and where you can save money. And I think goaltending is somewhere down the line where you're paying $10 million a year and almost more than anybody else in the NHL, where that might be somewhere where you can slash prices a little bit down the line if you can find somebody that can do the job. But if it's a young guy like Darling, you mentioned, like other guys that you're coming in and they're a backup and you're expecting them to be a number one, that is absolutely a risk. You're totally rolling the dice with guys like that to see if they can do it or not.
Joe Haggerty covers the Bruins for NBC Sports Boston, joins us weekly here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Appreciate the time as always, Hag. Stay dry out there.
You got it, boys. You too. See ya.
All right. We will talk with him, of course, next Saturday as well. We will continue with our thoughts on goaltenders, defensemen. We have to get into some of the forwards as well, because the Bruins won a game the other night without getting any points out of their top line. So we'll talk about that coming up with you as we get to hour number two here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. We can take more of your calls, 617-779-0985, here on a Saturday morning.
You're listening to the Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub. The Bruins, the NHL. This is the show that's all hockey.
He scores!
The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Sirai, and Bob Beers on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
He's been the number one. But if Yarrow's able to push him and eventually take the job, if and when that happens, then we'll look at that. We're going to try to keep it as balanced as possible early on. And then, like I said, if one separates himself from the other, like every other position here, we've allowed that to evolve.
Welcome into hour number two here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers in the Town Fair Tire Studios. 617-779-0985, of course, the number to join us. You heard Bruce Cassidy talking a little bit about his thoughts on the goaltender rotation right now. Yaroslav Halak with a solid performance against Philadelphia the other night, 26-save shutout. Already with two shutouts in five starts for him so far this year, a 3-0-2 record. Tuukka Rask has been up and down. That might be putting it a little mildly, actually. I mean, considering some of the starts, but well, he got the win the other night in Ottawa. He'll get a chance to play against Montreal tonight. You know, I have to think if he's at all paying attention, there's starting to be some pressure on him to step up his game. And look, it's not that he hasn't been in this position before. We've talked about it a lot, that this happened in November last year where there was significant pressure. He lost the job for at least a 4-game stretch before he came back and played really well off of that. And I'm sure the hope is in that room right now that, you know, that the same thing is going to happen, that he's got some pressure behind him and that he needs to respond accordingly at this point.
No, they're so, you know, they already deviated from plan a little bit, right? Because you had Halak, he made two straight starts. Mm-hmm. He started against Vancouver and he started against, help me out, Jay,
he started Edmonton.
Edmonton and then Vancouver, yeah. So coming off the Calgary game where Tuukka, he made some big saves in the game, but he also had pucks that went by him that, you know, he wanted back. And, you know, one of them was a rebound that kind of got away from him and the puck got knocked to the other side. Then he had no chance after, but there was a rebound there and one that he'd like to have back. And then the other one was the shot that went in from the point that just kind of got a piece of his glove and trickled in by him. You know, and those goals, it was because it was ironic. They gave up. They didn't play well again in front of him, and they gave up some odd man rushes, and he made several saves on some of those odd man rushes. You know, that's the saves that Halak was making the other night against the Flyers on a couple of the odd man rushes. That was what Tuukka was doing against, yep, Calgary, but it was the other ones that kind of get to you. And so what do? They go Edmonton, and Halak plays well. There's not really a lot of practice time between the Edmonton game and the Vancouver game. They want to get Tuukka some more work. They want the goaltending coach Bob Senza to work with them. Get a couple practices in. So they go back with Halak, and then Halak lets in an ugly goal there in the first period against Vancouver, and then plays really well after that when he was called upon. And that's been the only bad goal that I can remember, at least off the top of my head, for Halak this year. But other than that, he's been really strong. So what does Tuukka do? He comes back in the game against Ottawa, and he has his best performance of the year. Now, early on in the game, he acknowledged it, too. There were some rebounds there, especially on that first power play. I think Brandon Carlo saved a goal there. There was a puck that was along the goal line. But he settled into his game, and he played extremely well. Very well, in fact, in that one. So, you know, you're hoping that, all right, now you start to move in that direction. Come back with Halak. He gets a shutout. Now it's Tuukka's turn. So now they're back to the routine until they see until they let it play itself out. And I have no doubt that if things aren't going well for one of them, that the other one is going to play the majority of games. And that's, I mean, you're in the business of winning games. Who gives you the best chance to win? You know, and right now you're still trying to figure that out. Halak has been better, no question. He's been more consistent, no question. But you're hoping Tuukka builds on that game against Ottawa the other day.
Well, especially early on in the season, I mean, you have to give both of them opportunities to, you know, to show what they've got. And you know, Bruce Cassidy said we kind of...
It's not the same for some teams. It's not. It's different with the Bruins. I mean, some teams are riding that one guy, and you know, they're playing them, you know, almost all the games.
Well, most teams don't have two guys who legitimately could be starters in the NHL.
But yes, and then they scripted it out at the beginning of the season. They said we're going to try to go this direction. I said they already got a little off script with the two straight starts for Lark, but now they want to get back on script as long as both guys are playing well, and then it'll play itself out as the season goes on. So, you know, they're not saying that it's... I think competition is excellent. I mean, that's what they want. They want someone there that they can trust and that can push and be, you know, be a real good... And we'll call him 1A if you want to, but I think it's still backup right now, but we'll call him 1A if the season goes on. It's still such a long season to go.
Sure.
I mean, Rask, the numbers for Rask after Khudobin played the four games straight last year were off the charts.
He was astronomical.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was unbelievable.
So, you know, okay, when do we get to that point? And that's, you know, that was mid-November, end of November last year when that started.
So we were talking with Joe Haggerty, kind of looking at the bigger picture here, where we're not just talking about the first month of the season or even this season as a whole. You know, when the organization goes out this offseason and signs a guy like Halak, who's got the background that he does and is a capable starting goaltender in this league, I mean, that's obviously a lot different than going out and getting an Anton Khudobin to come in who's, you know, has not shown himself to be capable of carrying the load for a team over the course of a full season. He's a guy that you know is going to come in and play his 20, 25 games, maybe 30, but he's never really going to pressure for the starting job. They did something a little different this time around, and it's a guy who can be a starting goaltender. From an organizational standpoint, how do you look at that as far as, you know, are they really testing the waters here about what Tuukka's future is going to be with the organization? Are they looking at, you know, legitimately, you know, do you bring in a guy and say, all right, if he takes the job, he takes the job, and maybe we, you know, we find a different direction to go at this position in the future?
I don't think they're there right now. I think it's more, hey, we got a chance. We feel that we have a good team, and we need to give ourselves the best chance to win. And if it plays out like that, well, that's fine. You know, they're pretty high on a couple prospects they have. Everybody's high on the prospects, right? But they're pretty high on a couple of guys that they have coming through the system. You know, Vladar's trying to take another step down to Providence this year. You know, can McIntyre regain any of it? Jeremy Swayman up at University of Maine had a fantastic season last year. So they're pretty, you know, they're happy with some of the guys that are coming through the pipeline. But again, they're still a little ways away yet before they're here. Sure. So what gives you the best chance to win right now, today? And you know, they made that election to upgrade. And it is an upgrade with Halak coming in.
And I think the idea is you need two capable guys, whether it's 1 and 2, 1A, 1B, whatever. You're going to need both guys across an 82-game season. I think for the way that the Boston Bruins would like to employ Tuukka Rask to trying to get the best out of him, about the number of starts that he had last year during the regular season gave him the ability to not only, you know, ultimately you saw him end with some excellent regular season numbers and play well in the playoffs, give you a chance to win in the playoffs. But if you don't have that second guy, if you don't have that reliable guy, then you're overtaxing your number one guy, and then you run the risk that if you make the playoffs, what is that number one guy going to look like when the postseason hits? you know, did it impact Freddie Anderson? Vasilevsky played a ton of hockey. Maybe it impacted him at some point during the playoffs last year. But for these coaches that don't have a reliable backup, it changes the way that you have to coach the team and the result that you get down the road.
See, I guess, you know, my thinking of it, and it entered into my mind when they signed Halak, is this isn't just a capable backup, right? I mean, there's a difference between a capable backup and a guy who's, you know, who's a legit starting goaltender. And, you know, I think you look at Halak and say, you know, there are some teams around the league that he could definitely be starting for right now.
Probably. But I think it's just smart. You need to have two reliable components back there. Otherwise, you put yourself, or you could potentially put yourself, in a precarious position. What would Braden Holtby have looked like last year if he had not had Philip Grubauer to back him up? Now, granted, Grubauer is the guy that started the playoffs. Holtby struggled down the stretch, and then it was Holtby that found his game, ultimately won the Stanley Cup championship.
That was unreal. That Holtby is such a good goaltender, and to have that happen to him where he just lost it, you know, in March, right? Late February, March, and then he didn't play. Hardly played at all, and he doesn't even start the playoffs, and then he comes back, and he comes back strong, and they go on to win the Cup. I mean, that's an amazing story for a guy like Holtby. I mean, Carey Price has had his difficulties here over the last couple of years, on and off. You know, with injuries have been part of it, but, you know, and he's back playing well this year. So it's, you know, goaltenders, and I was talking to a goaltender the other day about it, and he was saying, our goaltending coach saying, look, the switch flips, you know, all of a sudden you make a couple of saves and all of a sudden you're back in a zone, you know, and the puck looks big again and you're just tracking everything and things are going well. And then it can go the other way in a hurry. But, you know, when it clicks in, it's just everything's there and it doesn't take much.
Well, we were talking about that with the defenseman earlier. The confidence plays such a huge role in the game, right? I mean, just having that confidence in your abilities that, you know what, you're maybe you take that extra half step out and challenge the puck. And, you know, it's, you know, it as opposed to sitting back and being tentative and letting it come to you.
I don't think there's any question that confidence plays a huge role, whether it's this game, any other. But the other thing that I'm thinking about is with goaltending. So you have the Edmonton Oilers last year. Cam Talbot was just not the same guy that he was the season prior when they went deep into the second round of the playoffs, and they thought, hey, okay, we're on our way, we're set. But maybe because he was overtaxed and played more games in the National Hockey League than any other goaltender 2 years ago, that it cost Todd McClellan and the Edmonton Oilers because they didn't have a capable backup that they could look to last year. And what happened? Talbot wasn't the same guy, may have been tired from the season prior. They didn't make the playoffs. Did not. I don't even know if they've rectified that last year, but you need to be able to have that guy that you can lean on at certain points, because there are going to be sometimes, whether a guy doesn't have his game or he loses his confidence, that you're going to have to rely on your second goaltender to get you where you need to go.
617-779-0985. You can join us here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. We'll get into a few more things going on with the Bruins this week coming up next.
Get in on the discussion. 617-779-0985. On 98.5, the Sports Hub. Get in on the discussion. 617-779-0985. The Sports Hub Hockey Show. On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Ryan Johnston, Bob Beers, Judd Surratt has taken his leave of us, headed over to Warrior Rink this morning to get the pregame interview with Bruce Cassidy. Check out the morning skate, assuming there is a morning skate this morning. They're more and more optional, right?
More teams are going towards it, but it depends on what the schedule is. So they played Thursday. If they had an optional skate Friday, then they would have a full team out there, right? Saturday morning. It wouldn't be a hard practice, obviously, but it's just a skate to get your legs going. But if you have a full skate Friday, then it would probably be an optional here today. So, you know, it just depends on what the schedule kind of dictates it. But some teams have done away with it altogether. Don't even come to the rink in the morning.
Yeah.
Very, very few, but there are a couple teams out that have gone that direction.
I think it was Torrey Krug was on with the midday show a few weeks ago when they were over at Warrior and was talking about that.
Some guys like it.
He said, you know what, I'd rather not be on the ice, you know, on the morning of a game. He's like, you kind of feel like it's wasted energy.
Some guys like it. Some guys, you know, over a long season, you know, do you need that much? Is it overkill? But, you know, like I said, it's, you know, you get to the rink. I think guys get into a routine where they like to get to the rink. Maybe they don't go on the ice, but they get to the rink, you know, they do up some sticks, they kind of get a stretch and, you know, get out of the house or get out of the hotel.
Right.
You know, I think that's, you know, that's kind of the thought behind it. But, you know, it's evolved over the years. You know, it used to be, you know, you just hop out there in sweatpants and, you know, go for a little twirl. And, you know, but now they became almost full practices. Not full, don't get me wrong. They're only out there 20 minutes, but it's, you know, it's a kind of
You're working on
20 minutes and then you're off. So, yeah, you work on a little power play maybe. You work on a couple of little skills that you want to work on for that night or you're just, you know, you're thinking about and things have happened the last couple of games. All right, let me take a couple shots from this spot. Let me take a couple shots from this spot. Let me take a couple wraparounds, you know, getting pucks out of the zone. You know, that's just little one-on-one stuff with the coaches. So, you know, there's a lot of things that they're valuable to it, I believe, but it's sometimes, you know, it's not always easy for the young guy to take the option.
Right. You know? there's a little pressure on you.
An optional, and it doesn't mean optional, but young guys need to be out there. No, it's an optional. If you don't want to be out there, don't be out there. You know, if you feel you played a lot the night before, a couple of days, or, you know, you're a little banged up, you want to take the morning off, take the morning off. But, you know, usually they have the meetings. That's what I mean. Get out of the house, get out of the hotel, get a stretch, have a meeting, you know, about the team you're playing that night and maybe go over some things that would happen, you know, the day before or whatever. So it's a valuable tool, but it's not for everybody and it's not for every game. And a lot of times if they play back-to-back games, especially if there's travel involved, then they won't even go to the rink in the morning, maybe do, you know, meetings in the hotel.
Meeting at the hotel, yeah. All right, let's grab a couple more of your calls here. 617-779-0985. Kevin is in Sterling. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hello, guys. How are you doing?
Good morning.
That's good. Hey, I'm originally from outside of Toronto, so I've been living here for about 24 years now, and I still am a Toronto Maple Leaf fan, so I sort of call your show. But my question was, in the Eastern Division with the Bruins and the Leafs, I've noticed that the Leafs have tightened up in terms of their defense with you know, the first couple of games. Is because, in your opinion, when it comes to playoffs, defense wins the cup. I just want to get your comment on that.
I appreciate it, Kevin.
They had to. I mean, you know, everybody's excited about the addition of Tavares, and rightfully so. Matthews is on a tear. Marner's on a tear. They're still trying to get the Nylander things figured out. You know, the offense there is off the charts. There's no question. But when you have to play against a team like Tampa Bay, who's also in the division, and I'll throw the Bruins in there.
We saw it in the playoffs last year.
Yeah.
I mean, that team is dangerous offensively, but in the playoffs, you can't be trying to win 6-5 in the playoffs.
Defensively, they weren't good in the playoffs. Jake Gardner had just a dreadful game 7 against Boston. But it was, you know, it's not an individual thing. That's a team thing as well. You know, you got some of these young guys who are just unbelievable offensively, you know, but are they willing to put in the time and the effort and the work and, you know, to go in the other end of the ice? You know, I think Tampa has some of that, and I think that's why they're one of the favorites here in the East. I mean, Toronto's certainly going to be – they know that they need to tighten up defensively. And now whether that's an addition of another player that helps them stabilize their defensive unit or whether it's just a system and it's a team-wide, you know, pack mentality, here's how we have to play defensively. We can do this without sacrificing offense, or we can score enough. We're going to score enough goals, but we've got to be able to defend when the games get down to tough games. And you know, that's, you know, they got, whether there was a couple games there where they got shut out. They were shut out and they only scored one goal in another game, and that was against a couple decent teams, good teams. You know, and they weren't able to score, and they still weren't able to defend as well as they wanted to either. So they know that they have to. There's no secret there, and you know, that division right now is shaping up. I mean, 10 games into the season, so still a long way to go. But most people assume that no particular order: Tampa, Toronto, Boston, and then they have some other teams fighting for it. Buffalo looks like they're an improved team. Florida's off to a bit of a slow start. Some of that's goaltending and not having Luongo in there, but they're off to a slow start. you know, Detroit's where you assumed that they would be. I expect Ottawa to be to slip a little bit. By the way, here's a stat for you on Ottawa. And I just found this unbelievable because they played Colorado last night. And the line of Rantanen, McKinnon, and Landeskog, who are off the charts right now out in Colorado, they combined for 10 points against the Ottawa Senators.
Not a bad night.
All right. Well, the last game that the Bruins played the Senators, Bergeron, Marchand, and Pastrnak combined for 8 points. And the first time that they played Ottawa, they combined for 11 points. Two games against Boston, one against Colorado. The top lines have combined for 29 points against the Senators. That's like unbelievable. I mean, I know you're talking about two great lines, but so the Canadians tonight are a bit of a wild. They're off to a decent start.
5-2-2 so far.
Joe Julien hasn't been playing well, and I'm curious to see what they've got and what kind of system they're playing right now and how they've kind of changed things. The additions that they picked up in the offseason, Tatar and Domi, they lead them in scoring right now. They're right at the top. So, you know, they've made some changes. They're still without Shea Weber, and you know, I'm curious to see what they have. I'm curious to see how they play.
Let's go to Matt in Belchertown. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning.
Hey guys, love the show. Thanks so much for all your insights. One quick thing on the goaltenders, and I want to get to Jake DeBrusk. But I'm totally fine with a 60-40 thing like that Hags mentioned. I think it would be great, and I think it would. You know, there's plenty of opportunities for either player to step up, and there's lots of examples in NHL history where two goalie tandems have worked great, so I'm fine with it. On Jake DeBrusk, you know, sometimes when I watch him out here, this is essentially, I guess, it's really his sophomore year, if I'm not mistaken, and he's an energy guy, and I love that energy, but, you know, it's a little bit unfocused at times, and he almost reminds me a bit more of a third or fourth line energy guy when he's not really on his game. And I wanted to ask you guys, is that just the sophomore thing, maybe some bad bounces? I mean, he got a goal the other night, and that's great, and he's playing better. But are other teams playing him differently? Just kind of wondered what you guys thought was getting into DeBrusk's game. Thanks.
All right, thanks, Matt.
Yeah, he plays with kind of a reckless abandon. He's had that energy most of the season. What does he have, 3 goals now? Mm-hmm. What did he have last year, 16?
Yeah.
You know, you hope that he builds on it and gets up to maybe the 20-goal plateau. You know, the energy that he brings the majority of the games is exactly what you want. You want him to be first on pucks. You want him to hunt, you know, on the forecheck. There were times last year where his game would dip and they would sit him out. He sat out 2 or 3 times last year as a healthy scratch, and he always came back with a great response. And I just thought his playoffs last year were he really elevated it, especially against Toronto. He had some big goals against the Leafs in that series. He got banged up against Tampa, so he was less effective. And the way that he plays, he's going to get banged up a bit. You know, he goes after it. You know, he's going to take a couple of hits here and there. He's going to fly into the boards. He's going to lose his balance here and there. But so, you know, you kind of understand that, but you still want him to bring all that energy and what makes him a good player every shift or every game, I should say, and he could be a good compliment to David Krejci. Krejci's picked it up a lot lately here. Point a game guy over the last, 8 games or so. More than a point a game guy, I believe. So, you know, he's picked it up and started to really, and then whoever's going to play it, whoever the third guy's going to be on that line, Danton Heinen, he's got assists in back-to-back games. I'd like to see him put one in the back of the net, but he's got assists in back-to-back games on good plays, on good, smart, heady plays. So they can be a good complement to one another. You got the speed and the tenacity and the jump there of a guy like DeBrusk. You got a guy that can win some battles along the boards and Heinen when he's on his game. And you got Krejci, you can find them and make the good plays and make the smart plays.
Yeah, I mean, so much of what we've talked about here over the first 10 games had to do with, you know, the Bergeron line, and they're carrying almost all of the scoring, and, you know, kind of waiting for especially that Krejci line to start chipping in a little bit more. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago when Krejci kind of came out and said, you know, I got to do more. I've got to be better. I've got some guys around me that I've got to help be better. And
that was the moment or not, he has been.
He has been. You know, he's followed that up. And like you said, he's gotten himself and that line chipping in more, and you see it against Philadelphia the other night. Top line doesn't have a point, and they still win a 3-0 game, and DeBrusk ends up with a goal the other night.
That surprised me a little because the Flyers can be a bit porous. You know, they can allow some chance. They weren't without chances, but, you know, I remember the Pastrnak's chance in the second period there where he point blank, Elliott made a good save on him. But, Yeah, they're not. You know, that hasn't happened this season or many games this season. Actually, I don't think it has happened where they've won a game without that line contributing.
I want to
at least on the score sheet.
I just want to ask you real quick before we get to headlines. Ryan Donato, what are we seeing out of him early part of the season? I mean, he obviously came in a lot of promise at the end of last year, had some real big flashes, but you know, we've seen him get healthy scratched this year. I think a lot of people had some pretty big expectations for him. Still early, but yeah. What are you seeing out of him so far?
I mean, last game he got a little snake bit. He had a great shot coming down the left side, used the defenseman as a screen and ripped it off the crossbar. That was a good opportunity for him. He had another chance later in the game. I think he hit the post later in the game.
Posts,
I don't know if Elliott made the save or not. But he was around the net. I mean, he battled more. He had a good game against Philly. I remember when he turned a puck over and then he was like first on it to make sure that nothing happened because of that turnover, you know. Ottawa, you know, just going back game by game, you know, Ottawa not as involved.
Well,
decisions.
That he's a threat to score on every shot he takes, but it's the whole game. It feels
game.
Like that they're
the
really
skill, the skill and the shooting is there. No, there's no question. That's there, but it's there is more to it, and you know they're trying to put him in when he's in there. He plays a lot of the top power play unit. You know, he plays a lot of with that Bergeron unit, so they'll give him that time, even though he's on the fourth line in 5-on-5 situations. But he gets in the penalty trouble or somebody gets banged up, he's a guy you can move up the lineup to play in some different spots and see if it sparks something. But it's, I mean, I'm still with the fact that, you know, there's a couple guys that would benefit from playing down in Providence. But right now, I don't think that there's anybody that I know of, at least, pushing down there to be up here just yet. I mean, Solark was a healthy scratch one game. Tomorrow he's playing with a couple of new guys down there, a couple Europeans. One guy that the Bruins brought in as a free agent. Another one just signed as a tryout contract in Providence, but have had success over in Europe. So, you know, who's down there pushing for those spots right now? I can't say for sure because I haven't seen them play firsthand. I'm just going on numbers. You know, maybe there is somebody that I'm overlooking. But right now, you know, this is your lineup, and you don't have any extra forwards here right now because Backes is banged up.
Right.
And they were only carrying one extra forward to start the season. They had two extra D and one extra forward. So Backes banged up. Your lineup is your lineup up front unless somebody's brought in. So, you know, he's getting an opportunity here, as they all are. You know, Bjork, up and down a little bit. But when he's on, you know, he's playing well. You know, Heinen, they've had to sit out. They've sat out all three of those guys.
Right.
It hasn't just been Donato. It's been Donato. It's been Bjork. It's been Heinen. They've all sat out at least one game. So they're trying to find the right mix and trying to keep these guys sharp.
All right, Tim McCone gives the Sports Hub headlines. Billy Jaffe will join us to go around the NHL next here on the Sports Hub.
That's the right pass in. Let's go!
Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. Ryan Johnston, Bob Beers with you here on The Sports Hub Hockey Show. We will take you up until 11 o'clock, turn you over to Gasper and Murray coming up next, and I'm sure they will be fielding all of your World Series calls. Those of you just waking up, plenty of time to comment on that game. A lot of fun last night at 3:30 in the morning. Just saw a tweet from a sports business guy who said, Commissioner Rob Manfred, really can't grasp as to why the ratings are down. For this series, I think ratings at 3:30 a.m. were probably huge. I guarantee they won the time slot because if you were awake, you had to be watching that game. But because it's up against infomercials and all that stuff, Billy Jaffe from Nesson joins us now on the hotline as we all get ready for the Bruins in Montreal tonight. What's going on, Billy?
Just enjoying this beautiful, sparkly, sunny morning here in Boston. That's it, buddy. How are you guys doing today?
Doing great. Running on no sleep. It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't make it. I didn't. I tried. I didn't have it in me. Did the other guys, did the Beards, your judge, stay up or no?
No, I got to, I missed Evaldi, so it must have been, what, the 11th inning?
Yeah. So you punched out pretty early. That's close. Yeah.
Well, I punched out at 10th. I'm like, I can't. I'm done. I have to be up early.
You missed Evaldi. He pitched the last six-plus innings of that game. So
yeah, I missed him.
You missed a lot of fun.
Yeah, I read about it. I read about it this morning. It sounds like, not sounds like, it was an epic game. Good for them. I mean, I wish they won, but what a fun series so far.
All right, let's talk about some things going on around the NHL this week, Billy. I want to start with St. Louis because it's not often that a coach seems to be calling for his own job. But Mike Yeo is kind of in that boat. I mean, his team has started off pretty dismally, 2-4-3 so far. Took a thumping against Columbus the other night, gave up 7 goals. Mike Yeo doesn't sound like he's long for this job.
Sure doesn't. I don't get this. You know, falling on the sword, first of all, this early in the season, and doing that, and Beersy, I think, can speak to this well, too, with regard to, you know, from a former player perspective, when you have a coach that is saying, yeah, my job should be analyzed, too. I mean, basically saying, you know, if I'm fired, I understand why. I mean, it's too early for that. Players, whether it's conscious or in the subconscious, they start saying, like, really? That's what this guy's saying? You're forcing us to defend you? 10 games into the season, 9 games in, whatever it is. You know, Doug Armstrong hasn't come out with anything public yet, fellas, but I do know that he went down to the minors where he was watching some of his players to see if there's somebody to bring up. You know, they're getting production from Ryan O'Reilly. He's got 11 points in the 9 games that he's played. And Perron, one of the players they brought back on a 4-year, I think it was $15 or $16 million contract, he's been producing with 9 points. But overall, they've just been—they haven't been nearly as stout defensively, and they look almost timid at times, fellas. And you know, Mike Yeo, nice guy, I've known him for a long time, not coaching well right now. So he doesn't need to say that he could be fired. He may get fired and it will be sooner rather than later if this keeps up.
On a positive side of things, Billy, I'm looking at stats right now with Colorado. And their top line, mm-hmm. with all due respect to Bergeron, Marchand, and Pastrnak, who we see here every day, this line's numbers are through the roof. Rantanen leads the league now with 20 points. He's plus 14. MacKinnon has 18 points. He's plus 12. Landeskog has 15 points. He's plus 14. He also has 4 game-winning goals. And these guys are, I mean, and they put on a show last night together. They had 10 points combined against Ottawa last night. I mean, they're unbelievable right now. Rantanen, 5 goals, 15 assists, leading the league in points.
Yeah, and he's a beast. He's 6'4", 215 pounds, and still growing because of his age. Remember a few years ago, Landeskog was going to be traded for everybody and anybody. The team was bad. He was having a hard time kind of leading him into the area of the captain he needed to be. And now he's healthy, and along with MacKinnon, I'd say they're all quite happy. Bob, this line, compared to the Marchand, Bergeron, Pastrnak line, is bigger, much bigger. The smallest guy in the line, I think maybe MacKinnon, it might be him, but he's also thick and fast, like fastest, one of the top 5 fastest skaters in the league fast. So, you know, with 2 big wingers, power, they're showing some amazing hands. Yes, they're top heavy right now. They are getting, they're really getting some pretty darn good goaltending from Semyon Varlamov, who is under a 1.6 goals against average. He is also in the last year of his contract, so I think he's playing for his contract life, so to speak. He's going to sign somewhere if he doesn't end up staying in Colorado. Remember, they made the acquisition for Grubauer last summer to bring him in there. But this line, is doing everything for this team. And nobody there, at least people I've spoken with and read, is lamenting the fact that they're dominating and they're not getting enough scoring from other lines. They're saying we're just going to go with this line right now. Now the question becomes, just like the Bruins with their top line Beersy, come playoff time, what happens if that top line doesn't produce as much? That seems to be always the concern.
One of the surprises out of the gate so far in the Eastern Conference, Billy, Carolina, goofy celebrations and all. First-year head coach Rod Brind'Amour has a 6-3-1 record through the first 10 games. They're leading the Metro Division in the early going. What's going on down there? Have they found something?
Well, they're having fun. There seems to be some fresh air with Brind'Amour and his staff behind the bench. And I mean, they're getting goaltending that I just don't. I mean, here's the cynic in me. I don't think Peter Mrazek and Curtis McElhaney can keep it up. I think Darling was recalled yesterday after his injury stint. Mrazek still played.
But now the question becomes, is can Scott Darling be a legitimate number one for this team or not? But they've got one of the, I guess you'd call it maybe the best secrets in the game down there in Sebastian Aho, who's one of the top scorers in the league. He's just behind the guys at Beers. He mentioned he's in, and Bergeron. He's with 15 points right now. Not that big of a kid or thick of the guy. He's about 5'11", 175, 80 pounds. But I remember the old assistant GM down in Carolina, Ricky Olczyk, telling me that how good this guy was going to be 3 years ago. And, oh, my God, is he good. Same draft, second round pick in 2015. So the same draft as Connor McDavid and Eichel and DeBrusk. And pretty good draft when it's all said and done. This guy's really, really good.
He's got points in every game this season.
Every 10 games, exactly. Like 10 in a row, amazing stuff. I also think there's, in RJ, having Justin Williams now as their captain there, I think it's a nice influence on these guys. He's pretty outspoken. He's getting close to the end of his career. And I'd say that he has Mr. Clutch next to his name for winning goals in the Stanley Cup playoff games in his career and winning cups. And I think that means a lot for this team, having him as the captain.
Another team, not a surprise, getting off to a great start is Tampa Bay, 7-1-1 so far. Are they going to be the team that everybody's going to be chasing in the Eastern Conference this year?
Yeah, I don't see how they're not. I'm still a believer in Pittsburgh, and I like Washington too. I got to see a lot of things need to play out with the Caps with regard to new coats, and can they muster up that needed energy for a big second run in a row with the same team, basically. But Tampa, to me, seems to have a ton of purpose. Vasilevsky, he did start out on fire last year, too, but there, people I talked to down there say that he's even he's in great shape. He's a phenomenal athlete, but he's even better, more prepared. Remember last year, the end of the year, fellas, you talked about a little tiredness. They're saying he's better prepared this year. Excuse me. They still haven't gotten great performances out of Kucherov and Stamkos. Stamkos has 5 points in 9 games, but they're getting great overall balance. Awesome defense. Hedman did get hurt yesterday. I don't know if you guys saw that hit that Ryan Reeves put on him. You want to talk about like a major car accident on the ice? It was a clean hit, but oh my God, was that impact. Two huge men. Hedman went out. They don't think it's long-term, but they have Ryan McDonagh there, who steps up and plays almost 27 minutes. And, he's a stud, too. It's a really good team. One area that they've gotten so much better, is their penalty kill. They have two assistant coaches that are handling it now, and Todd Richards and Derek Lalonde. Lalonde's a new assistant coach there. And they're number one in the NHL right now. They were in the bottom third, or actually the bottom, I think, five teams almost all of last season in the PK.
I guess while we're flip-flopping and going from good to bad, let's go to bad again. Los Angeles Kings, 2-7-1 on the season.
God.
They've lost six in a row, and if I'm not mistaken, all six have been in regulation. They're really struggling. Closed-door meetings, that hasn't seemed to take shape either. So is this something that's salvageable here in L.A., or is it just too early yet?
Well, I think it's I guess the question is, what is salvageable? I'm not throwing it back. I'm saying, meaning, are they just a playoff team? Maybe. Beersy, I don't know about you. Do you think they're fast enough in this game anymore?
No, I thought that for a couple of years, though, right?
Exactly. But they had enough skill to get by. Adding Kovalchuk in that presence.
That's not going to make them faster.
Exactly. They're not getting faster there. It seems like they're having a harder time with their defense, that they haven't been able to be, as they were always known for really being good defensively. Quick has been injured. He's 0-3-1 right now in the season. His goals against is just under 5. I mean, it's unbelievable. I look at them and I say, as they're constructed, it's not a new age NHL team there right now. I'm not ready to write them off. I'm one of those guys that I believe in certain players like Drew Doughty. I like Jeff Carter. I love Anze Kopitar. Kopitar only has 3 goals right now. I just don't think they get pucks with speed in enough of the right areas on the ice right now, Beersy. And if they can't change that, then it isn't salvageable. If they can via trade or influx of youth or something, then it maybe is. But I do not look at them. Of the three California teams, to me, they're the weakest. I thought that going into the year. I wasn't thrilled with, or I didn't love Anaheim's team, but at least they've integrated some youth and some speed, and they've got an amazing goaltender in Gibson. Quick has been injured a lot and just, again, hasn't looked sharp early on, nor has the team.
All right, we had Billy. I had Billy do a little research this morning. There was a report came out yesterday from Chris Johnston, no relation, up at Sportsnet in Canada, who said that the NHL is going to be making an announcement on Monday morning, going all in into the sports betting business. They're going to be announcing a partnership or partnerships coming up. I think, you know, for a league that has struggled for years to properly market itself, this might be a good step in the right direction as to getting more people involved as more and more states are going to be legalizing sports gambling here over the next few years. This is going to get more eyeballs on the sport.
It should, and it should make it, and I am not a gambler, and I'm really not a gambler, especially on hockey, because it's a brutally tough sport, I'm told, to gamble. I'm told that this should make betting on hockey much easier, too. This is the early stages. This is what I've found out. Basically, they're going to be forming multiple partnerships or a few partnerships with groups because it's not legal in every state yet. So they're going to be making partnerships with companies or groups or whatever that basically now the NHL will control how the information gets out, what type of information it is, and, you know, especially statistic-wise. And basically what they're saying is, you know, there are companies out there, fellas, that could have used hockey and gambling and done it legally, but couldn't use the team nicknames, couldn't use the statistics that are, you know, owned by the NHL, couldn't use the logos, etc. So I think the NHL is just saying, look, let's protect our entity, let's protect our domain, let's partner with these companies that specialize in gambling, let's give them certain flow of information too, especially statistics. There's going to be even greater player statistics now that will go, and what it opens up, and this is really where I don't no gambling terminology well. Somebody calls it prop bets, where now, you know, if Bob Beers is playing for the Boston Bruins, they could say, I'm going to bet on how many shots Bob Beers has in the first period or in the game. You know, they would say that. Or they over or under.
Now that's a flow of information.
And player tracking is going to be big, too. Trips and everything. Supposedly, this is the initial process in it. So hopefully they won't have trips for us broadcasters after games either. But anyways, this is a lot about controlling the flow of the information, the overall entity, the domain control, and making money at it, too. And by the way, fellas, this is considered hockey-related revenue. So the more that the NHL kind of gets into and earns, and then the more that the players might get involved with, especially when it comes to the player tracking end of it, because if they're making money, the league's making money, everybody's and getting exposure, everybody will be happy, especially if HRR gets impacted.
Yeah, I mean, we just know. I mean, fantasy football has done wonders for interest in the NFL. This is the next step in that evolution in bringing in legalized gambling, and I'm glad that the NHL is embracing it, because a lot of the leagues were very much against this while that court case was going on. So Billy, we'll let you go on that. Appreciate the time as always. We'll talk to you next week.
See you, fellas. Have a good day.
All right, Bruins and Montreal tonight. You can hear it right here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Judd and Bob will have the call. 6:30 pregame, 7 o'clock faceoff over at the Garden. Stick around, Gasper and Murray. Take your calls on the World Series coming up next here on the Sports Hub. We'll talk to you next weekend.
This is where Boston talks hockey. 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 The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5 The Sports Hub.